Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on the road. Having a lot of information to share with you today, we're going to talk about helping diabetics. Two separate studies on that, and stress is going to impact your heart. We're going to give you the latest on mangoes and how mangoes can improve your overall well-being. And if we want to do something to slow down brain aging, we're going to talk about that. In our environmental segment today, we're going to look at the weather and also on how Alex manipulates the media and public perception about why we shouldn't be that concerned. We should. Also, from public health segment today, there's new research on GMOs, on pigs, cattle, and what happens in their body when they are eating GMO soy and corn. From Christina Sarich, Nation of Change. Not good information if you eat meat that is not organic. Also today, I've set aside more time this week for commentaries. I've written about five in the last week that I'll be sharing with you over the next 6 or 7 days. Plus today, from Lawrence Taubman from Occupy.com, America's Defining Choice, A Free or an Authoritarian Future. From William Blum, Eavesdropping on the Planet, Whistleblowers and Edward Snowden. This is the backstory. This is the story that people, unless they're from my generation, were activists, would not know. And it's worse than what Snowden has reported on. Then from Stephen Ledman from Global Research, America's Deplorable Human Rights Record. And I'm particularly interested in sharing this because how many times have we heard the presidents, Bush and Clinton and Obama, say that we must have this massive military, industrial, and spy complex to protect us because we represent the highest ideal of democracy and freedom. Do we? Let's just look at our actual records in that context. And finally, from public social issues, the signs that the U.S. poverty level is exploding. But who's it hitting worse? Children? Yes. And the young people? Absolutely. And I'll give you why the information being shared by the economists, the so-called experts, and our federal government on how good things are here. They are, if you're wealthy or if you're a contractor, almost like a parasite to a host. But if you're the average person, if you're an average teenager or kid, it isn't good times, and it's going to get worse. Let's begin. We have an epidemic of diabetes in the United States today and prediabetes. People who have not been officially diagnosed but who are overweight. And generally, if your body fat index is, if you're a man, 20. If you're a woman, 24, there's a high probability you're going to be diabetic. And if you don't exercise. But there is this good news. If you do exercise, this is in Leiden University Medical Center in the Netherlands. It says, moderate to intense exercise reduces fat stored around the heart and in the liver and in the abdomen of people with type 2 diabetes, even in the absence of any change in the diet. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Radiology. That means you lessen your risks of having serious complications from diabetes by that exercise. All right, so how could the average person exercise? Well, it's simple. Walking. Walking as briskly as you can. That's power walking, where you're moving your arms, you're walking ideally about 3 miles a day with no interruption. And I know there are malls all across America that open up early for walkers to come in and to walk in them, and that's good. Around a track, except in hot weather, that's terrific, unless you do it early in the morning. Now, if you can do more than that, then cycling, even in your home, at a high level of resistance, where it's really hard, where your muscles burn, for a half hour. That's excellent. Then if you can run in a swimming pool back and forth and back and forth and carry water weights, these look like giant sponges, and when they're in the water, they take on the water weight, and hence you're exercising your whole upper body, your back muscles, neck, triceps, biceps, quads, delts, pecs, all of that. From your waist up, you're exercising when you're lifting your arms with the weights in them. But again, these are, without the water, they're like sponges. In the water, they are heavy. But that's terrific. Plus, you're getting resistance. Now, that's also good for people who may have some form of limiting a physical condition. They may have really bad arthritis in the joints or hips. They may have bad knees. So this is easy for them. So again, you're getting in shape, and it's helping you with your diabetes. From Loyola University in Chicago, a new study that shows that women with diabetes taking vitamin D benefit from having a reduction in blood pressure and depression. This was done at the Loyola University School of Nursing. And here's what they say, quote, this was presented at the American Diabetes Association Scientific Session. Vitamin D supplementation potentially is an easy and cost-effective therapy with minimal side effects. And so that was beneficial. So we're happy about that. So take your vitamin D every day. We are a very stressed society, and some of that stress is inevitable as we have to downsize our life, as our health is impaired or challenged, as we find ourselves more and more at risk of being broke or divorced or out of work or with heart disease. And more Americans are waking up and finding out that today they get the news that a parent or a loved one has dementia or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or multiple sclerosis and will require rather constant attention. And that is very stressful. Keep in mind, as a group, caregivers die faster than any other group, substantially faster. I just interviewed, and I hope you listen to it. If not, you can go to the archives, a mother and daughter. A woman in her late 40s, the mother in her early 70s. And until 2 years ago, everything seemed fine. And then it wasn't. And then it became progressive. And I asked the daughter, when did you know something was wrong? And she said, my mother is meticulous in how she goes about her day. And I started realizing that my mom's was forgetting stuff. She'd leave her purse. She never did that before. And then we'd be having a conversation, and she would tell me what she was going to prepare my dad for dinner 3 times within 5 minutes. She's never done that. And it just got progressively worse until it was diagnosed as Alzheimer's and stage 5 Alzheimer's. And that's when I sat down with them, and I spent time, and I gave them a protocol, and they've been adhering very strict to the protocol, and the results have been absolutely terrific. And again, it's only now 5 weeks. It'll take about a year and a half. My hope is within a year and a half she should be completely normal. And I intend to have them on this radio to give us progress reports. Now, mind you, she was under treatment for 2 years at Columbia University's Alzheimer's group and received no improvement and couldn't handle the medications. So now she's off the meds. She's taking a tiny amount of one particular med to stabilize balance. But outside of that, all of this improvements to her lifestyle. During this 2-year period that the daughter's been taking her mother into the hospital or the clinic and working with her, she has gained 50 pounds. Her hair is falling out, her nails are getting brittle, she's missing her period. A lot of problems have occurred, and she's frequently depressed or anxious because she says, I don't have a life. I don't have any life. I spent the last 20 years raising my two children, and now the moment, the very month that they're out of home on their own, I now have my mom, and I'm having to work with my mom as if my mom is about 6 years old. She said, I was unprepared for this. And she said, Gary, if there's any message you could get out to men and women in my age group, let them know that they ought to be really emphasizing a change and a detox in their parents, because they too, in all likelihood, are going to get that call. And they too then will have the arguments with the siblings, who's going to take care of mom or dad. Well, I don't have time. I've got kids. Well, I don't have, you know, my career is full time. I can't jeopardize. But someone is going to have to, and whoever that someone is, they have to understand it's going to totally change their life. And frequently people won't be prepared for that. And then they'll just start making all the wrong decisions. And she said, I'm now making healthy decisions and I'm healthy choices. And in the 6 weeks we've been on this, I've lost about 15 pounds. I'm feeling much better, no longer depressed. But here's the big one: heart attacks. Why? Because caregivers who are highly stressed chronically are much greater risk of having a heart attack. This is from the British Heart Foundation, and it was published in the European Heart Journal. Quote, stress can significantly impact your heart. Anticipating that you're unhealthy because of stress has a negative influence on your heart. And they took a look at people over a long period of time, almost 30 years, and found that those who perceive stress as significant to their health had twice the risk of experiencing coronary heart disease compared to those who did not think stress was making an impact. Quote, this is from the senior cardiac expert at the British Heart Foundation. The effect of stress on your body and heart is extremely complex, and it's something we don't yet fully understand. These findings raise the possibility that the mere perception of stress can impact on heart health. And that can lead to heart attack, stroke, blocking of the arteries, and suffering cardiovascular disease. That can shorten your life substantially. So what is the takeaway message here? Well, there's a couple. First and foremost, you are what you perceive. So if you perceive that you're in for a stressful time, whether you are or are not, that will immediately impact yourself. That's serious. So if you think, oh my goodness, I can't do this, or oh, I'm going to be stressed by that, oh, that, I can't make that change. I mean, you're going to be what? You're not anything, but you're creating something. You're creating something that does not exist in this moment, and then your body's taking over. So just remember, when you think a stress thought, your heart is put at risk. When you're living under chronic stress, you don't like your work, you're unhappy in your relationship, you're unhappy with your circumstance in life, you're putting your heart at risk. So seeking out any number of therapies, stress management therapies, and in stress management therapy, there are at least 200 things you can do. Everything from Bach flower remedies to aromatherapy. Just sitting in a room with an aromatherapy and infusion of sage, for example, or peppermint. So many good oils that impact, when you smell them, impact your brain chemistry and calm you down. Well, then I suggest to people who are chronically stressed to put one of those diffusers at work, in their workspace, or at home, putting lavender on their pillow, 2 drops of lavender on their pillow. That can de-stress them, allow them to get to sleep and have a more healthy and deep sleep. Or going for a walk in nature. When my day gets so hectic, I just stop everything. I walk over to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. I go up to the second floor. I go back to the American Hudson Valley painters like Thomas Cole and Frederick Lewis Church, and I just sit and look at their magnificent creations. And because we think everything is inanimate, that it has no force other than just being looked at, and hence as an object, I know better. There's a living energy in everything that we create, and it is indelible. And hence we share the exchange of that painter's work, that sculptor's work. And it can stay with us. It can impact us. The same as just watching children play, watching animals in a field, a bucolic scene. How many times in a museum have you seen the paintings where you see a farmer and you see this pasture with cows? Something relatively simple, but it relaxes us. It transports us away from concrete and steel and chrome and noise and traffic lights and surveillance cameras and people rushing and the frenetic pace of an existence to a time where it was not measured upon external clocks and artificial deadlines, where people lived in rhythm with nature. That we have lost. We have to regain that, and we can do steps, just taking time each day to be around something that reminds you of nature. Sitting near a fountain, overlooking, you know, a park or in a park, anything. So many ways to de-stress. When we do, we save our lives. Now, there's the Physicians for Responsible Medicine, who I've recently filmed. The leading ones for a new documentary, had this to say, and this is based upon a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine, which touted the benefits of the Mediterranean diet for those who are at high risk of heart disease. And what they did is they compared a Mediterranean diet supplemented with nuts and a Mediterranean diet supplemented with olive oil for low and a low-fat diet. The only significant difference was a reduction in the risk of stroke for those supplementing with nuts and olive oil when compared to a low-fat diet. Here's what they say, quote, "The problem with this conclusion was that the low-fat dieters did not receive personalized or group information on how to follow a low-fat diet, and they never got close to what would qualify as a low-fat diet. Fat intake in the low-fat diet went to 39% fat." Well, that's not low-fat. 10% is low-fat. And for context, the typical American eats about 33% of their calories in fat. So the conclusions were all wrong. Several studies have touted the benefits of a low-fat vegetarian diet for heart disease prevention. Dr. Dean Ornish, for example, has done that repeatedly. Research shows that filling up on fiber-rich foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes and pulses will reduce the risk of heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. Here's their takeaway message. Plant-based diets also speed up metabolism, which can help with weight loss. In fact, populations in Europe with the lowest body fat index follow a vegan diet. When it comes to fad diets, it's important to understand the research. The predominant evidence still tells us that low-fat, plant-based diets will bring about the best possible outcomes for all aspects of health. And what does that represent as far as the what we believe is important about the European diet, Mediterranean diet? Because there are people in the Mediterranean area that don't have a low-fat diet. They have actually a high-fat diet. There are lots of cheese. Some eat a lot of meat. And so we've taken only what we in the West think is important. Oh, fish. And it's not the fish. All the studies show that a plant-based diet, which is naturally low in fat, and then supplemented with the nuts, primarily walnuts and macadamia nuts, have the richest form of oils, naturally occurring fat that benefits our heart. Because in all the studies, vegans outperform meat eaters by a tremendous difference. And when it comes to heart disease, cancer, obesity, and life expectancy. Now, mind you, that's a vegan that doesn't take any supplements. that doesn't exercise, that doesn't take phytonutrients. Now, when you do those things, suddenly you go way above any standard. In fact, it becomes an exemplary standard and should be the standard in the world. We just haven't done the single long-term large study. But if that happens, then you'll find that those of you who have been making these changes are way ahead of the standard American diet and even ahead of the idea that you need fish. And that's what this New England Journal of Medicine, oh, you know, have the fish. Okay, well, you're getting the omega-3 fatty acids. That's good. But you're getting a lot of fat. That's not good. So the average amount of fat in a person's diet eating, that is higher than the average American. That's bad. And the average American amount of fat each day is horrific. That's worse. So what was it, really the omega-3 fatty acids from fish, or was it the omega-3 fatty acids from nuts? It was from the nuts. So the nuts are what help your heart. Pine nuts, almonds, pistachios, all good. But then superstars, walnuts and macadamias. Also, one last thing that can help lower your risk of dying of a heart attack or having a stroke: having a pet. This is from the American Heart Association. Quote, over the last decade or so, there have been periodic reports on the association between pet ownership and cardiovascular risk. Dr. Glenn Levine, the cardiologist involved in this, actually looked at the research and found that those individuals who have pets have less heart disease. It's easy to understand why, because your pet loves you unconditionally all the time, is always excited to see you. If you go out for fun 20 minutes, come back, they're wagging their tail and, you know, or talking if they're a bird, and they're always happy. And they like you no matter if you're having a good or bad hair day, whether you got sweet or sour breath, they love you. You know, it's hard to find a person who will do that. And the bird doesn't give you an attitude. So no wonder that they're finding that those who have a pet have less heart disease. I definitely think that's a great idea. We're going to do one last thing here, then I'm going to move on to other issues, and that is a simple food. When I was in Cuba, from one end to the other, stopping all along the way and interviewing thousands of people, I noticed the number one fruit that was for sale in little buckets, about a gallon bucket, were mangoes. And everywhere you went, there were mangoes. And they have a lot of different dishes they make with mangoes because it grows wild, and the state does not prohibit growing and cultivating mangoes and selling them. And all up and down this highway, you see little vendors just sitting, you know, under an umbrella and a little lawn chair and selling buckets of this. Little tiny watermelons, some citrus, not much. Bananas, lots of bananas. But everything is bureaucratic in Cuba. It's a mess. And there are resorts, but there's no Cubans there. Unfortunately, it's mainly the Germans and people who've done deals with them. It's a beautiful island. In fact, I stopped and got out and just spent an hour in one area down near the end of Cuba, because when I came up over this hill, there were natural waterfalls on one side of the road with palm trees, and it kind of reminded you of the most beautiful places up in the mountains in Hawaii, and lush green jungles on the other side. And you think, wow, this is just spectacular. But the people have not been supported in a way that allows them to be self-sufficient. And it's loosening up a little bit, but not what it should be. And I talk with enough people to know the rampant racism that exists there, that's all hidden and denied, and by people don't want to get in the way of their revolution. But then when you talk with enough people, as I did in every major town and city, as I did, and you spend time not in the hotels, as I didn't, but rather in people's homes, regular people, and you see them cutting with a razor blade little pieces of pork because that's their ration, of course, I didn't want to tell him I'm a vegan. I just said, oh, I'm, you know, not a good stomach today, but you eat it. And then I'd take him to the farmer's market, and for $5, I could fill up the back of a van with food. It was so inexpensive. But the mango is something that's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And that's also true in some other countries, in Central and South America and the Caribbean especially. But the average American doesn't eat mangoes. It's just one of the things we eat bananas, apples, oranges, grapes. In season, peaches, less so nectarines, grapefruit. Younger people don't, older people do. Then you get into the star fruits and kiwis and the berries that are a little more exotic. And some people eat them, most don't. The mango, most don't. You should. This is from the Journal of Nutrition and Food Sciences, and here's what it says. That mangoes are one of the healthiest fruits you can eat. They are very rich in vitamin C, potassium, fiber, and they actually are lower in added the sugar content. And they also lower the C-reactive protein. Now, this is what I found interesting. This differentiates it from a lot of other fruit. We know that C-reactive protein is a pro-inflammatory measurement in the body, and the higher your C-reactive protein, the more likely you are to have heart disease. So when you have C-reactive protein and you have to get it down or you risk heart disease, and if there's a fruit that can help do that, that's a functional fruit. That's a functional food, quote from the study. Overall, the results found in this study that show that people who consume mangoes tended to have better intake of nutrients like potassium, vitamin C, and dietary fiber, contributing to better overall better quality of health than those who did not. This research also underscores the importance of helping individuals identify fruits such as mangoes that can be readily incorporated into their diet. And I agree with that. So, our food of the day is mangoes. Let's get it in there. And it's not messy. You can eat it over a sink. And what I'd like to do is you peel the mango back, and then you cut it off the flesh, and you put the flesh in a blender. You throw in some cinnamon, about a quarter of a teaspoon. You put in anise seeds, about a quarter of a teaspoon. Then you put in some rice milk, and you blend that up, and that's a great-tasting smoothie. And for people who want something really healthy, that'll do it for them. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting through our studios in New York City, out on the road, finishing up an important film this week. Our talkback segment is coming up in a moment, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm going to go to several other issues. Before I take my break, let me give you a public health issue and a commentary, and then you'll have possibly something you'd like to focus your attention when you call in. This is from Christina Sarich from nationofchange.org. First long-term study released on pigs, cattle who eat genetically modified soy and corn. Quote, it says that in the study, at a commercially inspected piggery in the United States, we took 168 just weaned pigs and fed them a typical diet for the piggery containing soy and corn for 22 weeks or 5 months until the pigs were slaughtered at their usual slaughter age. Half the pigs were fed widely used varieties of genetically modified soy and corn for this whole period, and the other half, the pigs were fed an equivalent of non-GMO diet. The GMO group contained 3 GM genes and therefore 3 GM proteins. One protein made the plant resistant to an herbicide, 2 proteins were insecticides. In this short study, this mixture of genetically modified foods led to a toxic mix in the digestive tract of the animals, leading to a reducibility of the GMO-fed pigs to reproduce. The pigs were studied from conception until slaughter, and all were affected adversely. Female pigs were found to have the following possible pathologies measured through careful analysis and post-mortem examination. Endometrial hyperplasia, carcinoma, endometriosis, inflammation, thickening of the myometrium, larger presence of polyps. They also were more sickly. Stomach ulcers, inflammation of the stomach and small intestine, thinning of the intestinal walls, increase in hemorrhaging in the bowels, and this caused the pigs to bleed to death from the bowels. Among these horrific findings, scientists also noted that none of these type of results had been reported in the biochemistry tests performed by Monsanto or other companies in the GM industry. So, here we have one more study on pigs. One group fed GMOs, every single one adverse effects. One group fed normal soy and corn, no adverse effects whatsoever. So then when the industry does a study, we never hear any bad results because they control the study. When it's done independently, we hear nothing but bad results. So this concerns me that we're not being told the truth. Do you want to consume, if you're an animal eater, do you want to consume flesh that could end up passing those gene characteristics on to you or your family? It's worth understanding. From our social issue comment today, we're told that things are improving. Well, I guess they are for a small segment of the population, probably around 15%. Indeed, they are fine. They've been fine, and they'll probably even get better. Now, we're not talking about the 1%. They're in the 15%. They're uniquely protected from everything. But that leaves 85% of the American population. That's not okay. And amongst that group, it's not okay. I want to share some signs that the U.S. poverty explosion is hitting children and young people the hardest. The percentage of children living in poverty in the United States is worse than any since records were kept on children in poverty in 1975. More than one out of every five children in the United States is living in poverty. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 57% of all American children live in a home that is poor or low income. Median household income for families with children dropped $6,300 in the last 10 years. That's a big drop. For the first time ever, more than 1 million public school students are homeless. Their numbers have risen 57% since 2007. It's being projected that half of all American children will be on food stamps at least once before they turn 18. Also, in the 18 to 24-year group, they have a higher unemployment rate than any other group in the United States. In fact, young adult employment is now at the lowest level it's been since World War II. And family that have a head of a household under the age of 30, the poverty rate is 37%. Now, mind you, a lot of these people who are listed as poverty are working. It's just that because of the greed in the United States and the fascism, the marriage between government and private industry, they're able to keep the wages low and the benefits low and keep the profits for themselves and their stockholders. But that means we have an enormous amount of working poor. Over 10 million Americans are poor, are listed as poor, and yet they're working. So when we hear the people at Fox who believe that you're lazy and that anybody can work who wants to, it's just a lack of will, motivation, and you're more interested in welfare, they're not looking at the reality that the majority of the people who are having a rough time are actually out there working. And so they're so wrong in their views. family homelessness in Washington, D.C. region, one of the wealthiest regions in the entire country, has risen to 23%. That means that almost one out of every four people in Washington, D.C. is in the poverty level. And in 1984, the median net worth of households led by someone 65 or older was 10 times larger than the median net household worth led by people 35 or over. And today, the median net worth of households led by someone living who's 65 or older is 4,700% larger than a person who is 35 or younger. So the younger have nothing, the older have a little more, but still it's not a lot. And in fact, one survey discovered that 85% of all college seniors plan on moving back with their parents after graduation. Overall, approximately 25 million American adults are living with their parents in the United States right now, as I'm doing this radio show. 25 million people. Those would be 25 million homeless people. They're couch surfing. So, the next time someone tells you how good things are, I guess it's a matter of their perception. Because from where I'm at, I'm seeing out here filming an awful lot of people who are not. A commentary. America is a country, and as an ideal stands for nothing unless it stands for freedom. Freedom to achieve the ambitions proclaimed in the Declaration of Independence. But in order to have the freedom to pursue life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, the founders created a Bill of Rights to ensure that Americans are free from certain specific abuses of power that they had viscerally experienced under King George III. The Fourth Amendment is explicit, quote, "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized," end quote. The Constitution, of which the Bill of Rights is a part, is the highest law of the land, and at government levels also. To violate the Constitution is not only illegal, and if committed with intent, criminal, it is also sacrilege, a violation of the essence of American self-governance, and of the sanctity of the lives of those who fought for and are continuing to fight for that ideal. Every major war that America has fought has been fought for the ideal of freedom from one form of authoritarianism or another. The American Revolution fought against the authoritarianism of its day, monarchy. World War I sensibly fought against authoritarianism in the form of military imperialism. World War II fought against fascism, and the Cold War against authoritarianism of communism. Today, whistleblowers are fighting the same scourge that the founders and every genuine patriot has fought against. Only today, the authoritarianism that we're confronting isn't a foreign enemy, but one from within. Not that this is exactly new. Before the advent of the Internet, there was COINTELPRO, the covert FBI counterintelligence program that spied on and actively disrupted civil and political rights activists of the 1960s and 70s. From Martin Luther King to then Attorney General Robert Kennedy, the final report of the Senate Select Committee investigating COINTELPRO, called the Church Committee, made important findings that reflect an endearing truth. Unchecked government power inevitably leads to abuse and evisceration of freedom. Specifically, the committee found that the domestic activities of the intelligence community violated specific statutory prohibitions and infringed the constitutional rights of American citizens. The legal questions involved in the intelligence programs were often not considered. On other occasions, they were intentionally disregarded in the belief that because the program served the national security, the law did not apply. And while intelligence officers on occasion failed to disclose to their superiors programs which were illegal or of questionable legality, the committee found that the most serious breaches of duty were those of senior officials who were responsible for controlling intelligence activities and generally failed to assure compliance with the law. Indeed, the committee found that many of the techniques used then would be intolerable in a democratic society, even if all the targets had been involved in violent activity. But COINTELPRO went far beyond that. The FBI conducted a sophisticated vigilante operation aimed squarely at preventing the exercise of First Amendment rights of speech and association, on the theory that preventing the growth of dangerous groups and propagation of dangerous ideas would protect the nation and deter violence. COINTELPRO and his progeny, Stellar Wind, Total Information Awareness, and most recently PRISM, all raised the question, if America turns into the very thing we have always fought against, who will fight to preserve the freedom that is America's essence? President Obama said that he would like to have a dialogue on it. No, he wouldn't, and that won't happen. Because if there was a dialogue, there'd be Chris Hedges and a lot of individuals who would share a point of view that he would not be able to defend. All the years of funding the security state, especially since 9/11, has created an enormous interlocking entity with many of the same defense contractors who have been servicing the Iraq and Afghan wars now moving into a whole new market, domestic internal surveillance and policing. Until the revelations of the last couple of weeks, drones in the vast data storage complex in Bluffdale, Utah, were the most visible examples of this. Now you can add the vast worldwide surveillance of everything electronic. It's the choice of whether to be a people free from authoritarianism in order to be free to pursue the ambitions of the Declaration of Independence. It's a choice between being on the right side of history and fighting for the essence of what America stands for, freedom, or choosing fear and the false hope of security. What former defense contractor turned whistleblower Edward Snowden has said he fears most is not the United States government's inevitable hunt to capture, torture, and prosecute and incarcerate or kill him, but the fear that most Americans will simply not care about it or even hear about it, the state of global surveillance he has risked himself to reveal. In a recent interview with Bill Moyers, Harvard professor Lawrence Lessig said that Snowden's concerns about public apathy to his revelations of government gathering data are well-founded. Quote, I think the thing he most fears is the most likely outcome. And he is right. There's a lack of attention given to the Wall Street bailouts or even to their popular response, Occupy Wall Street. Quote, I think ordinary people have lost the sense that there's a reason to try to engage politically because in the end, they know that the cards will be dealt are against them. And the cards will be dealt not according to what makes sense or what people actually believe, but where the power is. And here the power is both the literal power of the most powerful security state in the history of the world and also the power of enormous interest to support and continue that state. Genuine patriotism today means resisting authoritarianism by demanding that the government be restrained by the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the First and Fourth Amendment, among others, and accepting certain inherent modern day life as opposed to accepting what is historically certain, that if we choose the illusion of security over freedom, we will have lost both. In conclusion, at this pivotal moment in history, a moment that will define America for generations. Are we the brave people who have risked our lives over centuries for freedom, or have we lost our national soul and now are the mere remnant of our former self, willing so easily to give up what those who sacrificed their lives have given us? The essence of each generation is about what it passes on to the next. If we give up the torch of freedom, the race has essentially ended. And right now, it has ended. We are a police state. We are spied upon. Every single phone call, email, text, everything is watched. If you protest, you are targeted. Not just a few, not just Chris Hedges, not just Gary Noll, but everyone. And it's that complete. The people who do the spying, it's just a job. It doesn't make them patriotic or doesn't make them angry with us. It just means if they're told to do something, they will do it. And we, on the other hand, we have not shown our concern. We still vote for these people. Shame on The Nation magazine and its supporters who believed that The Nation had the right insight in selecting. What, didn't they also select John Kerry? Didn't they select Al Gore? They should have selected Ralph Nader. But this just shows you the kind of conceit that is inbred so deeply into the ideological left. It is palpable, and it's disturbing. And they represent the liberals, not the ones I know. And look how they're all interconnected. But that's unfortunate. And then look at where are the movements? Where are the movements today for our children in poverty? Where are the movements to stop home foreclosures? Where are the movements to reverse student debt, homeowner debt, exploitative interest, usurious interest rates? Where are the movements? There are a few out there, but they're in the wrong direction, and they've been naive, including Bill McKibben's group. You could have 10,000 Americans wrap themselves around the White House and all get arrested. It's not going to change the fix. You just have to be wise enough to see when the fix is in, then you have to take a different position. And unfortunately, people can become so wrapped up in their own belief in something, they don't see the truth of it. As a result, they waste their energy. And then they've had their moment, and that moment goes. But the fix was in. The only way we can confront corruption today, which is endemic, is by removing the economic incentive for them to continue to exercise power as they have. The power of giving us junk food is to stop eating the junk food. The power of exploiting us into the American dream, which is a complete illusion of owning some bricks and mortar and calling it my dream. No, your life should be your dream. Your children should be your dream. Your relationship should be your dream. Not a house. So you stop buying into their Bernay concept of your ideal. You're not Ozzie and Harriet. And that was a myth. So stop buying their products. Stop shopping in their Walmart. Stop watching their television shows. Stop listening to them on radio. Stop your banking. And most importantly, only vote for independent, populist-minded individuals who have the courage to stand up for principles and at least, in the moment they're elected, will not have compromised them. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment with Talkback. Please stay with us.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising. She'll find the note I left hanging on her door. She'll laugh when she reads the part that says I'm leaving. 'Cause I've left that girl so many times before.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. And to Robert and your family in Oklahoma. You said, Gary, can you play some of that music we like? Well, I just did that for you. Let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for today's show. Yesterday... An out-of-control forest fire in Arizona killed 19 people, and I feel they gave their lives in our battle against climate destabilization. due to the excessive amount of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere because of our use of fossil fuels, including nuclear energy. And in the name of millions of people around the world who have suffered and died, including these 19 firefighters, I'm calling for the massive divestment of coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear, and the reinvestment in clean, renewable product, clean, renewable energy. And I believe it's time to get star-powered. It's time to get solar if we're going to continue having any kind of decent lifestyle on the planet.
Well, I commend you for that, Harvey, but start with yourself. Look at the things you buy. They were all made, or most of all of them were made, using fossil fuels. That means that you and I have to buy organic, sustainable, and green, and not a faux green, but a real green. Let us be the examples that we hope others will inspire to do, and that will make a good first step, because politically, we're not going to shift over in the culture we have, which is utterly corrupt, and the laziness of the average person to look at issues. So we have to encourage those industries, but those will be startup industries, to do this. And if we keep on it, it'll happen. It'll happen in time. Thank you, Harvey. I appreciate your input.
Thank you, Gary.
Desiree from Brooklyn. Hi, Desiree.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
I'm calling to ask your advice about purchasing a rice machine. I found so many different models on the internet. But I want to make sure that I'm getting my money's worth and I'm purchasing something that works.
Okay, there is no proof that I'm aware of that any of them work. I have looked at all the background, and I can't go into it because some of the scientists that met with me did so with a confidentiality agreement. But I've actually used their machines on specific individuals in a medical clinic, and we couldn't find the truth of it. So it doesn't mean that it wasn't real originally. It was. It's just that the formulations, the frequencies, I have not seen duplicated in any clinical setting that would give me confidence that anyone selling anything would actually help people. That's
so
my own personal look.
What is your advice for people who have Lyme disease?
Lyme's disease, there are many protocols you could use with Lyme disease. And we're nearing the end of this program, but what I'll do is I'm going to spend more time tomorrow on TalkBack. So if you call in tomorrow, I'll ask our engineer to put you up first, and I'll give you and anyone else suffering from Lyme's disease a full protocol, all right?
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye. Let's go over to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I have an email here from one of your listeners, and he says, just for the record, Americans' confidence in Congress falls to its lowest on record. And amazingly, in 2012, our confidence in Congress was only 13%, and this year it dropped down to 10%. So just because we don't have, the question that the listener asks is, well, just because we don't have confidence in them anymore, what can we do? What can we do about it? Because, I mean, look at our confidence has dropped in big business, newspapers, TV news, banks. They're all dropping. The only thing that people have more confidence in is small business and church and organized religion.
Well, because small businesses, we know, these are our friends. Many of these are the people that we grew up with. And so when we go to support them, there is a personal connection. Now those businesses are being closed because the landlords have conspired with state legislators to put in legislation that protects the landlord. For example, almost every single small business pays the landlord's real estate the taxes, completely, 100%. That's unfair. And then on top of that, you have additional city taxes you have to, commercial taxes you have to pay. So one, Tony Soprano's got their hands in one pocket. The other, the city, is always your sign-up partner, does nothing for you, but it's got his hands in your other pocket. The poor business person, 150,000 small businesses in New York alone have closed. And that means hundreds of thousands of employees have closed. So we have to have a program that rejuvenates the small business. By the way, small business people employ more people than any other outlet in the United States, including the federal government. So we have to give low-interest loans, meaning no more than 2%, with a two-year grace period, so no payments returned for 2 years on principal or interest, so that they can expand their businesses or open new businesses that can cause a re-employment in their area. That's where we should be putting our energy, and we haven't done that yet. That's how I would help. And let me tell you this, if our belief in the government and our trust in the government was 1%, that's 1% too much, because it deserves no trust, no respect. Our government is completely, totally corrupt at every level. The bureaucracy is massive, bloated, and inefficient. It doesn't care. People go to work sometimes, 10 different people do the same work every day. And yet no one cares, because they're a political vote, and it's always buying the vote, irrespective of who has to pay for it. And at the end of the day, someone has to pay for it. And that's why these people keep telling you to have government expand. These people are simply disconnected from the truth of what it means. So we need small, tiny government that's efficient, with rules and laws to protect us and the environment and defend us and protect the public commons, and nothing else. And that would reduce the size of government by at least 50%. And that's what we need. Okay, we're out
Sounds
of time.
Good.
Thank you all for taking your time to listen. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone. Now let's say hello to Yatrice Lead. Hi, Yatrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about Assange, Snowden, and the virtual world order, and court jesters, the Zimmerman trial as entertainment.
Good. Yatrice Lead, right now on Progressive Radio Network.
Getting higher in L.A., you know where that's at. And no one's